Why stand still when you can run headfirst into a wall? You're listening to the Jocular Pugilists. Well, it is time for Guilty Pleasures, our TV edition.
Is that what we're talking about today?
That is what we're doing today, yes. Welcome to the show. This is the Jocular Pugilists. I didn't know if you knew that, but...
See, no, I have it written down that we were supposed to talk about the buoyancy of mammalia. So that's 18 hours of research down the drain.
So what would you consider a guilty pleasure? Kind of categorize it for me. I know we've talked about this, but I need to get it in my head as we're going through the show.
Well, I had said in the last podcast, I think there's two types of guilt that you might feel. One would be the guilt about overconsumption, watching multiple series in a weekend, just never stopping watching TV. That'll make you a bit guilty. And then the other is quality. If the quality of something is thought to be of low quality, you might be guilty just watching a couple minutes of it.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah.
If your favorite show is, I don't know, Who's the Boss or something, you might be embarrassed about that. I don't know.
Boy, you know, you hit a nerve when you said watching too much. Because I can definitely go into binge time, you know, on a weekend and watch hours of TV. I live in California. The sun is out, catching up on shows.
The abundance of content that streaming has made available to us has made it easy to binge.
Yeah.
It's just incredibly easy now.
So here are my categories. The first one is, of course, if you're embarrassed to tell your friends about it. If you're embarrassed to tell your friends, then it's a guilty pleasure, right?
Yeah.
But I was also thinking... like, sometimes it's nostalgia. Like, so a show might be good when you were a kid or when you were younger, but then you watch it again and it's completely dated. The jokes don't make any sense, you know.
Funny enough, we experienced something like that recently.
What did you have it with?
So Tracy and I really love the nostalgia of old shows and sharing it with Gabriel.
Yep.
And a little while ago, we streamed a Fantasy Island, and man, it was pretty twisted.
Which one was it? What was the plot?
I'll be honest with you, we didn't watch enough of it to actually discern the plot, but essentially what we got up to was there was a part where Mr. Rourke forces himself on a guest.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
Jeez.
So it was kind of, we like quickly went, oh, we got to take this off.
Yeah, probably not. That's like, you like turned on an episode of The Love Boat by accident. You don't want to do that.
The Love Boat? What episode of The Love Boat have you been watching? Captain Steubing slips gopher a Mickey.
So there is a third category that I have, which are shows that you know are terrible when you're watching them for the first time and you don't care, you're going to watch it anyway and you're going to tell everybody about it, but it's a guilty pleasure.
That's the train wreck thing, you know, or the car accident where you got to slow down and you got to look at it. Think.
And I can give you an example of that last category. Melrose Place. Do you remember when Melrose Place the original was on and everybody watched it and there were like watching parties? There was a bar in Boston. Remember Bill's Bar? In Boston, it was over by the fence, like over by where we lived back then, and they used to have a Melrose Place night, and everybody, it was a great place to, you know, hang out and meet women and just make friends and whatever.
And you were the only kid from Berkeley there.
There was no one else in Berkeley there. I was until I convinced people, hey, this is a great place to meet women and make friends.
Right, right. Nothing to do with the show. That completely escaped me.
Yeah.
The Beverly Hills 90508-0709. I don't know what it is.
Admittedly, it should have escaped you. It was not good. There was nothing good about it. But it was such a community thing that I ended up loving the show, not because the show was any good, but because of what it was in the moment. So that's another completely different category to me.
There are also shows that you didn't watch at the time because you assumed that you wouldn't like them, but later in life you watch them and lo and behold, you do like them. A great example of that for me was Frasier.
Oh, I love that.
I love it too. I just assumed I wouldn't like it. Well, the time it came out, also, I was just done with college, and I didn't watch TV for about 10 years, and it wasn't until Tracy said, you know, we should watch Frasier. I thought, I'm never going to like Frasier, and Tracy said, no, you'll like it, you'll enjoy it, and we, believe it or not, I was going to say we streamed it, but it's so long ago, it was just before streaming, we bought the DVDs, and I fell in love with the characters.
Yeah. I love that show.
Me too. But at the time, I thought, what would I have in common with this pompous, elitist, arrogant human being? You know, I would probably hate to be in a room with him. But you wind up loving the characters. And it was a fantastic show. A brilliant show.
And it's surprising how much you have in common with him, isn't it?
To some people.
Yeah.
And by the way, I have a story about going to a party in Seattle in an apartment that essentially was Frasier's apartment. Tracy and I went to this wonderful party and we overlooked sort of the Space Needle. It pretty much had Frasier's view of Seattle. And the story is amazing. I'd have to really think about it to get all the elements of the story together to give it justice. We'll do it in a future podcast.
Whoa.
But it's pretty damn cool.
Whoa. Were you drinking sherry and hanging out?
I was drinking wine. I should have been drinking sherry if I was thinking about it. What the hell?
That's the thing. There are so many different goofy TV shows that I love for the most ridiculous reasons. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, so I'm obviously not embarrassed that I like Frasier.
No.
Although I probably would have been. And many of my friends gave me crap about it. Musicians. Terry, he gave me crap about it years ago. But I'm not embarrassed that I like it. I like it. Though it's true that I have much higher standards than you, Phil. So that's but that's a different conversation. I don't want to get into that now. Also, I think that those type of sitcoms are a brief respite from the rigors of life. It's comforting, like a blanket, like a warm blanket on a cold night. Calm down, relax. We're here for you. Sitcoms, that type of a thing. You get to know the characters and you feel warm and cozy and relaxed and you can forget about the difficulties and the suffering that you might have endured during the day. Relax. It's like a, like I said, like a blanket or a piece of chocolate or ice cream, comfort food. It's comfort sitcoms, which I would say is completely different than watching drama, which has the potential leaving you anxious and uptight. Do you watch a lot of drama?
Yeah, I watch a ton of drama. I watch a ton of everything because I write also.
Yeah.
So I really consume a lot of TV over time, you know, not every day, but definitely over time. And I love drama as much as I love comedy. And I have this very weird thing where, like, if I'm binging a dark TV show, for example, like Breaking Bad or something that, or, you know, The Sopranos or something that lives in that dark world, after a while, I can't take it and I have to flip on something that that's uplifting, like The West Wing or The Big Bang Theory or, you know, some sort of...
A little lighter.
Yeah, that makes me feel better about life.
Well, it could be also that Tracy's not into any violence like that. So maybe that's why I don't watch as much of those. The thing about streaming TV, it isolated us as human beings. You can just watch on your iPhone or watch alone, and you can watch it whenever you want to. So that's one of the reasons why people are overdoing it. But there have been certain series like Breaking Bad that everyone watches, and you can share your thoughts in a timely fashion with friends, families, colleagues. I really do appreciate when these streaming services don't drop the entire series all at once. Like Netflix usually does. I like it much more when they do it weekly and you have that communal experience with people.
Yeah.
HBO, for instance, with Game of Thrones did that, and I appreciated that. And I even watched all of the Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
I even watched the last season, which was painful, but I powered through.
Yeah, I watched it again just to make sure that it was as bad as it was. It's actually not. I can justify the episodes and what happened a lot better than when I first saw it. When I first saw it, I was very upset.
Yeah, but that's the interesting part about those series. It brings us back to what it was like when there was a limited amount of channels and a limited amount of shows to watch, and we could all, as a species, communally watch something similar and share in that experience.
Right now, I have no actual live TV. So the only time I can do that is over at Stacy's. And we do it with one of my guilty pleasures now, which I don't know if you can officially call this a guilty pleasure, although maybe it's the show Outlander. It's much more for a female audience, but it's a very, very good show. But I'm not sure it's the most manly of manly shows. Okay, I really want to get down and dirty with the shows that we are most embarrassed by. What are some of your really embarrassing ones? Like Frasier's, that's not embarrassing. Let's embarrass. Go ahead. Embarrass yourself.
I mean, the only thing I could say that I'm really embarrassed about, and a lot of people are embarrassed about this, is that I sat through the last season of Game of Thrones. That, to me, was embarrassing. Right. But really, it's the 70s. It's the classic 70s. Shows that will catch me, that will capture me, that I'll stop and I'll watch an episode or two of.
Okay, now you're jumping into my nostalgia category.
For me, it's all nostalgia.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if I see one of those shows, it's very probable that I might watch it.
All right, well, check out this list. This might shake a few loose for you. Taxi, totally outdated, but still really, really great.
I love Taxi. I have the DVD box set. Come on.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Okay, Gilligan's Island. Gilligan's Island.
Of course, it's fantastic. The skipper, Marianne, the millionaire and his wife.
But that's it. I mean, but it's so bad.
It's so bad that it's good.
Right. Okay. Starsky and Hutch.
I love it too. It's a different category of bad, but I love that one as well.
Ah, we're right in sync. Okay.
I have a place in my heart in particular for the cop shows and the adventure shows of the 70s and 80s that weren't meant to be funny, but they're hilarious. Are you
Chips?
Absolutely. How about Beretta? I don't know if you know that theme song, but it's Sammy Davis Jr. You can't go wrong with Sammy Davis Jr. Or maybe you can, but at least in this theme song, you can't go wrong. It's awesome.
Don't go to bed with no price on your head. No. No, no. Don't do the crime if you can't do the time.
Keep your eyes. The $6 Million Man?
Yeah, all of these. Yes. I'm not going to watch many of them, but I have a place in my heart for it. And I love the theme songs. To everyone that you mentioned, I like the theme song.
Well, that's a different topic. I mean, they used real orchestras, and those theme songs are incredible.
I love how the A-Team, you never have to have watched the A-Team. If you hear the theme song, you know exactly what's going on. Because the theme song, they have the words. They just tell you, an elite force.
In 1972, a crack commando unit was sent to prison by a military court for a crime they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a maximum security stockade to the Los Angeles underground. Today, still wanted by the government, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the A-Team.
I love it. All right. What about, have you ever gone back and revisited Happy Days?
Not more than a couple minutes if I just happen upon it.
That is literally the show that jumped the shark.
The phrase.
And yet, it's still, I can watch it and enjoy it, and I know it's terrible.
This is interesting.
I know it's terrible.
What? Remember Arthur's, the diner?
Yeah, Arnold. It started as Arnold's.
Is that it?
And then it changed to Arthur's.
But okay.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I don't know it well enough, but do you remember the proprietor of that establishment used to be an old, chubby white guy? Then all of a sudden, it became Pat Morita, you know, an Asian-looking American guy. And you went like, did they explain it?
It was the other way around. It was the other way. Yeah, Pat Morita was
first. Okay, but still, did they explain it just one day? One day it showed up and you no explanation? It's the same character.
No, it's not. So the I can't believe I know this. It burnt down at some point in the series. Like it actually burnt down, and then they rebuilt it. New owner, you know, the whole thing. Planet of the Apes, the original, the TV series. Did you ever?
Never saw it.
So I gotta
maybe know it existed.
Oh, so my brother. Here's the cool thing about nostalgia TV. So my brother and I, when we were kids, my older brother, he's 2 years older than I am, and James and I would watch Planet of the Apes. I mean, it was a big deal for us when it was on TV because we were kids, you know, and the TV show was only on one season, but it was really really cool at the time. So. For whatever reason, I decided to order it on Amazon. I was curious. And I bought the DVD set. And then one night, James was in town. He was visiting. He was here for work, whatever. And we were kind of passing out, you know, as the end of the night. And he's looking through my DVDs, and he sees the Planet of the Apes DVDs. And he got all excited. And we ended up watching, like, a couple episodes of the original Planet of the Apes TV show. And it was so much fun because it brought us right back to when we were kids. It was really, really cool. It's like a...
Well, especially because you're with your brother
as
well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was a good, cool moment.
Should I watch it?
I don't know if it's worth watching at this point. if you've never, without the nostalgia, I would not recommend it.
Okay, so then I have to come clean with an overconsumption. Star Trek, the whole IP, I loved it all until recently. The movies made me not like Star Trek anymore, so I haven't watched anything past probably the late 90s, honestly, or maybe early 2000s, but I enjoyed very much so the very first series. Of course, Captain Picard. Honestly, that's when I started falling in love with Star Trek, was The Next Generation. So that's going to hold, which I know is sacrilege.
I don't think that's sacrilege. I think that's there's a different generation, no pun intended. The next generation that watched the show, a lot of people love Picard as the best captain.
okay, but everything Star Trek, up, you know, Deep Space Nine, Voyager. Generations, was that the newer one with Scott Bakula? But all of the Star Trek, I even watched the cartoon. I remember the cartoon years ago when I was a kid, and I rewatched it with Gabriel, you know, whatever, I guess 5 or 6 years ago. And I'll always have a place in my heart for Captain Picard because he just was a self-sacrificing character that made the hard decisions. He was a noble character, and it was someone that you looked up to. Like, I want to be as good as Captain Picard, you know? And actually, my wife made a magnet for me that had, WWPD on it and a picture of Captain Picard in it. And it was an acronym. It stood for What Would Picard Do? Which is amazing. So, obviously, I think highly of that character.
Have you binged those recent years?
Not recently, but when Netflix got the Star Trek franchise, I overdid it for a little while with streaming Star Trek shows.
So, I was going to ask you, what about like music shows? Were there any music shows that you would consider guilty pleasures?
Give me an example. What are you talking about? American Bandstand?
No. Although, yeah, actually, yes. And Soul Train. I loved both of those. But the Partridge Family. I love
The Partridge Family. Oh, yeah, the Partridge Family. I forgot about that. That's embarrassing.
It's totally embarrassing. I mean, I still love the songs. I love those songs. I Think I Love You. I do.
I'm sleeping and right in the middle of a good dream. Like all at once I wake up from something that keeps knocking at my brain. Before I go insane, I hold my pillow to my head and spring up in my bed, screaming out the words I dread. I think I love you.
I think I love you.
It informed your songwriting.
It did, actually, yeah. Very good point. And then there are shows even more current, like Empire. When that came out, the music was really, really cool, and I loved. And then it turned into a soap opera, and it got terrible. But the first season of Empire, I thought was...
I never saw it.
Was terrible. It's good cast. Terrence Howard. Jussie Smollett. Then he got weird, and that whole controversy happened with him, and that turned me off to him. But then that show Nashville, same thing. The first few seasons, the music in that show was amazing, and then it got too soap opery for me.
But, yeah, these are all new shows that you're mentioning. Yeah. I live in a time warp. I know nothing about those shows. Never watched any of them.
Oh, okay.
For me, it's just the sitcoms: Seinfeld, Third Rock from the Sun, The Office.
Wait a minute, The Office. You consider The Office a guilty pleasure?
Only that I overconsumed them.
Right. Okay.
We're rewatching Third Rock from the Sun right now. So when we have nothing else to watch, we'll watch a Third Rock.
Great show.
Wonderful. I just watched the episode with John Lithgow and John Cleese.
Oh, yeah.
It was really good.
Oh, that's awesome.
How about cartoons? For me, it was just Bugs Bunny, and I bought all the DVDs that I could get my hands on years ago, and then I shared them with Gabriel when he was younger. So I overconsumed some of that.
You know, it's funny. I guess I don't go to overconsuming as... I'm not as guilty about that. Like as you're mentioning these shows, and I get why you're saying, you know, you watch too much of it, so it's guilty. But the good shows. And I'm like, why wouldn't you watch these shows? These are good, you know, Bugs Bunny. I mean, come on. But you're right.
And it's so wonderful sharing that with your child.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's afforded Tracy and I the opportunity to allow Gabriel to grow up in a time warp, in a more innocent time.
What about, do you ever get into any of the superhero stuff?
Yeah, a little bit. On Disney, we watched WandaVision and we watched the Loki show.
Yeah.
They were not bad. They were pretty fun. WandaVision started really strong. I think Loki also started pretty strong, but they petered out. In the end, it progressively got worse and worse, which I think is sort of the modus operandi of these shows. They always do the exact same thing. They start strong and they end just haphazard.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So one of my guilty pleasures, and it will always be, is anything Superman. Mm. So Smallville had 10 seasons. I watched every episode multiple times because I love Superman. I don't know why I'm so obsessed with it. Lois and Clark in the 80s. Terrible, terrible show.
I even know of it.
Right.
Not Lewis and Clark? You're thinking of the Explorers?
Definitely not. Terrible show. Terry Hatcher, I was in love with her at the time, I'm sure, because it was the 80s, you know. But yeah, there's just something about Superman that, you know, that I have to watch it.
It's interesting.
I don't care. I'm going to watch it if it's about. Yeah. Yeah. And it's embarrassing. It's very embarrassing to admit that. But
well, it's nice to see you coming to terms with these flaws in your character, Phil. What about 70s and 80s B-level sort of, you know, not A-level, but B-level sitcoms from America? Like, let's say What's Happening and Different Strokes.
Oh, What's Happening? Oh, my God. I'm so glad you brought that up. That dance. Do you remember that dance
you used to do?
Good Lord.
Proving fantastic. Obese people can cut some rug.
Can
baby.
Definitely move. That's right. The Jeffersons.
Where we're moving on now.
Now, that might be a guilty pleasure. There, that might be a little bit, you know, questionable. It's still great, but...
In The Jeffersons, there's a character from Sesame Street.
Okay.
And I always thought, hey, that's the guy from Sesame Street. He got out. Somehow they let him out of Sesame Street.
So made his way wait.
To the east side.
Wait, which one? Which character? Which character on...
On Sesame Street, he painted numbers. On The Jeffersons, what did he do? I remember he was an English man. He told drawn-out stories that never went anywhere about his past. And wasn't he part of an interracial couple, which was a big deal in the 70s?
Oh, yeah. And the woman that he was married to, that's Lenny Kravitz's mom.
Is it really? Look at this.
Yeah.
All these tie-ins.
Yeah. Pretty wild. Yes. All right. Now I know who you're talking about. Yeah. For sure. That's amazing.
Well, Phil, if you permit me now, I'd like to regale you with some of the fascinating, some might even say litigious, history of the beginning of broadcast TV. What I like to focus on is not who were the first stars and what were the first shows, but rather who were the movers and shakers in the creation of both the TV and broadcasting TV. So as it is with almost any technology, any new invention, any new thing is usually a culmination of all of the things that came before it. Everything leads to the next step. One step leads to another. And it's no different with TV. It's really hard to point to just one person and say, that is the person that created TV. It's really a culmination of all these different technologies and all these different inventions that led to the creation of both TV and broadcasting TV.
I can't believe we don't know who actually created TV, really. That's wild.
Well, if you look on Google, it'll tell you that Philo Farnsworth was the creator of TV. But what I'm saying is that there were a lot of competing technologies that were happening at the exact same time that eventually became part of the TV as well. So I think there's a bit of debate as to who the actual first person that created TV was.
Okay.
Also, you have to think, are you talking about the television set? Are you talking about televised TV signals? Are you talking about the first TV shows and broadcasts and stations? All of these things are very important in the creation of TV. And all these things were being created pretty much at the same time by different people.
Got it. Got it.
Okay, with that caveat in mind, let's begin our journey. We'll start by looking at the word television. The word television has the prefix tele, which means far, from a distance, and vision, to see. Let's think of some other words that have the same prefix tele. Think of telegram, telegraph, telephone. All of these inventions allowed the transmission of information over long distances, and all of them were instrumental in the creation of TV. If you think about it, for almost our entire history, if you wanted to consume entertainment, you needed to go somewhere. You need to get up out of your hobble and go to the entertainment. Only since radio and TV has entertainment come to you. So this created a massive difference in the way human beings consumed entertainment, and it's evolving. It's still evolving. Even if you think of movies, when I was a kid, up till very recently, if I wanted to see a movie, I had to go to the movie theater. Now, not so much. You could stream that movie. So what was a communal experience has increasingly become an isolated one.
Yep.
All right, let's look at one of television's great-grandfathers, let's say, the telegraph. By 1837, telegraph wires were being laid across the globe as a crude form of long-distance communication. First, dots and dashes a la Morse code. Then, immediately, people started thinking, well, maybe we can transfer voice through these wires, and even pictures utilizing these wires. In 1860, a priest, Giovanni Conselli, invented the pentelegraph, a way of transmitting images through telegraph wires. The device would break down an image line by line and recreate it at its destination by stacking lines upon lines. And this was actually a critical step in the development of television.
That's amazing.
It's the same principle as TV. An image is broken down electronically, the signal is reconstructed then at its endpoint. So this device was the predecessor to the telephone. Now, although it did work, it was incredibly slow and laborious doing so. And its main use actually was just to recreate signatures for contracts. Another line of the TV family tree, let's say, was the Nipkow disc. In 1885, Paul Nipkow created something called the Nipkow disc. It was a circular disc that seemed to instantaneously create a picture. What you would need to do is you would need two of these Nipkow disc machines. One would capture an image, the other would recreate it at its end point. Now, I do not understand the mechanics of it. You can look online at pictures of the machine, but it seems to be a circular disc that looks kind of like, you could say, a record, let's say, that has holes in it. And I think it just captures part of the image, encodes it electronically, and recreates it at its end point.
So wait a minute. Is that where film... The concept for film started coming, like motion pictures?
That's a really good question, Phil. I don't know, but I certainly see the connection.
Okay. That's wild. Yeah.
Now, the creation of the tube was crucial to the invention of TV. If you don't know what a tube is, think of high-end audio and instrument amplification. Both still use tubes to this day often. And if you're old enough, you might think of TVs. Older TVs had many tubes in them. And in fact, the screen of an older TV is just a giant tube, essentially.
Wow.
That's where the saying, the tube, referring to TV, comes from.
You know what it's making me think is, like, what took them so long to create the TV at this point? You know, they've got all the pieces there. When you think of technology today, how fast it moves.
Yeah, that's like, what is it, Wright's Law, where enough technologies have to converge and then there's exponential growth. All of these were sort of separate technologies. Eventually, they started to converge.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, there's one other tube that I have to mention, the vacuum tube. A guy by the name of Lib Forrest created the vacuum tube. It's something that anyone that uses an amplifier uses. That's the tube that we have in our guitar amplifiers. The vacuum tube amplifies the signal, and it's crucial for the ability to send signals wirelessly. Now, in 1909, in Paris, the very first moving picture was transferred through a wire by Georges Renault and A. Fournier. I'm sure I'm saying those names incorrectly. It took nearly 16 years for a Scotsman, John Beard, to do the exact same thing wirelessly. He transmitted the very first live wireless image using a Nipkow disc and a vacuum tube system. There are pictures online of this event that you can see. He used two dummy heads, and it's pretty scary looking.
Yeah. So those were the first antennas, you know, like the rabbit ears were dummy heads.
Yeah, it's awesome. A good thing they didn't go with the dummy heads as an antenna. That was a good decision not to go with those. All right, now back to our history. In 1927, the man that is usually associated with the creation of TV, Philo Taylor Farnsworth, created the very first television set utilizing the CRT vacuum tube. Not the Nipkow disc, but a vacuum tube. He is widely regarded as the creator of the TV set. He was sued for that technology by RCA. RCA lost that suit. Farnsworth countersued and won $1 million, which back in 1927, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, that's incredible.
This is a shocker to me. In 1928, the very first TV station opened in Schenectady, New York. It was a project that General Electric was doing just to see if it worked. It's W2XB, and it's still in existence today. So by the 1930s, TV sets were being made and sold in America, which was a shocker to me. I think of TV as the 1940s, but no, the 1930s, TVs existed. They were teeny. They were really small. They're no bigger usually than about 3 inches. They were very poor quality, and there was very limited viewing options at that point.
Do you have the prices of like what a TV set cost back then?
No, I don't have exact prices, but as with any technology, in the beginning, it's always a higher price, and eventually it gets lower. It was also a really bad time to try to sell a new technology. It was the Great Depression. It was a luxury item that many people couldn't afford anyway.
And what were people broadcasting at that
point?
Yeah,
not much. I know that two of the things that were broadcasted back in the 30s were the World's Fair, and there was the very first public debate broadcasted in 1939.
Okay.
So interestingly, in 1941, there were only 5,000 TVs in all of America. Then World War II, the War Act stopped the production of TVs. When the war was over, we had a boom in America's economy. In 1947, there were 44,000 TVs in the United States of America. By 1949, there were 940,000 TVs in America. By 1953, there were 20 million TVs in the United States of America. By 1960, 3/4 of American households owned TVs. That is Wright's Law in action.
Whoa, that is insane. Yeah.
Now, RCA was also instrumental in getting TV into the hands of Americans. RCA stands for the Radio Corporation of America. Not only did they create television sets and sell them in America, they also created content. They had forethought. They realized that no one's going to want a TV if there's nothing to watch on it. So they created the National Broadcast Channel, or NBC, and started to create television programming. By the 1950s, there were three major networks in the United States of America that most of us grew up with, and that still exist to this day. ABC, NBC, and CBS. Now let's talk a second about color TV. They existed as early as 1953, but due to legal concerns, they were only allowed to broadcast on one bandwidth. And if you bought a colored TV, you could only see programming from these colored television stations, which were incredibly limited. You couldn't see any black and white TV, which was the majority of programming. So it wasn't until these things got ironed out in the 1970s, in the late 1970s, that colored TVs started to outsell black and white TVs in America.
Wow.
Now here's a strange thought. We went from cutting the wire and transmitting wirelessly signals into our house to watch TV to putting the wire back into our house with cable TV. And because it wasn't using the airwaves, no FCC interference, which meant that cable TV was a lot less regulated than traditional TV. And now with internet protocol, things like Netflix and all of the plethora of streaming services have completely changed the playing field. The idea of having to wait for a weekly airing of a show is foreign for most children.
Right, right, right.
I started this section by saying that entertainment used to be a communal activity, but now with iPads, iPhones, watching on your computer, it's become increasingly more isolated. In fact, for the last 2 years, the sales of big flat-screen TVs have gone down. It's clear that more and more people are watching entertainment on their computers, on their iPhones, on their iPads. This way of consuming entertainment has blurred the line between leisure time and work time. In the past, when we said screen time, we were referring to how much time you spent in front of your computer working. Because of things like YouTube and streaming, it now includes your leisure time. The average American at this point spends 11 hours a day in front of a screen. The question I have for you, Phil, is that a good thing?
Wow. And I'll tell you something. I just produced an episode, a podcast episode yesterday that where we had a psychologist on, and she was saying that to get a real good night's sleep, you should be off all screens 2 hours before you go to bed. Now, if you look at people's pattern, everybody watches their TV at the end of the day. Do you know what I mean? You have dinner, you go to work, you have dinner, falling asleep, and it's the worst thing for you. It's really crazy.
I mean, yeah, I grew up in a TV family, and I can countless times I've fallen asleep in front of the TV watching TV. I wonder how that's affected me both for good and for bad. I don't know. But that's a subject, my friend, for another podcast, because, Phil, you have a list for us, and I can't wait to hear it. What is it?
I do. Oh, as always, I have a list. And this one was actually a tough one to kind of find, because not that there are a million lists out there, but I mean one that I liked that I can look at and go, oh, I, you know, this is cool. So I actually, after my search online, I went to YouTube and I thought, all right, let me see who here is talking about the guilty pleasure TV shows, you know, who has a list. And I found watchmojo.com, which is a YouTube, also a YouTube channel. They had my favorite list. Mm. And the reason was, as I was looking at the list and they were describing the shows, it made me want to watch them. As bad as they sound for you, I actually wanted to watch a lot of these shows. So the number 10 show, it's a top 10.
It was scientific. You just wanted to figure out if they were right. It was an experiment.
Number 10 is a show called Catfish, and it's about people. It's a reality show, which is that's a whole other ball game that we could talk about. But it's about a show. It's about these people who get catfished, you know, on social media platforms, and then they find out that they were talking to somebody who they didn't think they were talking. They didn't know they were talking to.
Oh, so that's what catfish means.
That's what
it means. You're being,
yes, it
being
means
fooled.
They're being fooled online. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. I did not know.
Then number 9 is 1,000 Ways to Die. This is crazy. They recreate unusual ways that people really died. That's a show.
Okay.
I mean, how crazy is that?
It's dark.
It's pretty dark. It's very dark.
Okay.
Number 8 was The Big Bang Theory. Now, I don't consider that a guilty. I guess it is, but I loved it so much.
I'm going to create a lot of hate here. I've only watched it once, and I just, the humor for me, I went, yeah, I guess. It just, like, it's like humor I could have created. It wasn't as clever as I thought it should be.
Yeah, I think it's super clever, yeah.
It must have been the episode I watched.
Number 7, True Blood. That I get, being that is a classic to me. That is a classic guilty pleasure. Mm. If I were to watch it, I would not want to tell people that I actually watched it. But let me see. This one's interesting. Number 6, Beyond Scared Straight. So this is a show where they take teenage kids and put them in prison and film it. And like they try and scare the heck out of them with real inmates, like they would.
Right, it's the same. It's the same as Scared Straight from 30 or 40 years ago.
Exactly. Except it's beyond. It's beyond Scared Straight.
Yeah, beyond. No, they're totally frightened. They're just shit in their pants.
Right. Number 5, Grey's Anatomy. For obvious reasons. Number 4, Jersey Shore. I think for obvious reasons.
After I want to wash after I've seen a commercial for Jersey Shore.
completely understood. And then number 2 is Big Brother, which is, you know, that reality TV show. And number 1, which I'm glad, and this is what I liked about this list, they really tried to hit from a bunch of different categories. Number 1 was the Jerry Springer Show. So if everybody remembers that, brutal. I mean, they would try and there's a bunch of, you know, there's Maury Povich and, you know, other people that do this.
Yeah.
But they really try and put people together and instigate fights on stage. I mean, that's pretty much, it's pretty bad.
Right. How much of that was staged? How much of it was real? That's the other thing.
Yeah, good question. I mean,
who knows? What was number 3? Did I cut you off? What was number 3?
Oh, number 3 was Riverdale. And that's another one of those like CW shows where everybody's good looking and they're all, you know, 18 to 22, you know. That kind
so
of thing.
Not one of those top tens do I want to watch or have I ever watched?
I've never watched any of them, but except for the Big Bang
Theory. No guilt for me.
That one I watched. Yeah, no guilt for you. But I am interested in 1,000 Ways to Die. I'm interested in Catfish. That might be a fun little watch, you know, a little stupid.
Got it.
Stupid things. Anyway, the one thing I wanted to say about reality TV before we go is, and this I truly believe, and I really think he needs to get credit for it, is I think Howard Stern is the first ever reality TV show. I know everybody says, you know, MTV with The Real World and all of that.
Yeah, he might predate it because he was around in the 80s.
He definitely predated it, and it was on TV, and he was taking all of his, you know, people that worked for him and creating characters out of them. I mean,
for our international listeners, if you don't know who Howard Stern is, he's an American shock jock DJ that started probably in the 1970s, and in the 1980s he became pretty popular in the 90s, where he was syndicated across the whole country.
Yeah, he's on Sirius. I think people probably, well, maybe they don't. Maybe you're right.
So, but that's interesting. I agree with you. Howard Stern could be the beginning of that.
Anyway, again, thank you all for sticking with us through our ridiculous conversation about TV and, you know, just following us and following the podcast. We really love it and really appreciate it. You can find us on thejocularpugilist.com. You can find us on all of the socials. You can also, if you want to support the podcast, and we really do appreciate this, if you can go to Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star rating and review, subscribe to the podcast. You can also do that on Spotify. You can follow it and leave a 5-star review. All of that stuff means something and helps the podcast along, helps it to grow, helps people to find us that may not have found us otherwise. So that would be great if you can do that. I'm excited. In about an hour, I leave for my trip to Europe. And I'm going to be doing, Tomas has convinced me to do some commentary. And
that's right. He's our intrepid reporter.
That's right. While I'm over there. So that'll be fun. I bought a little microphone that I can hook up to my iPhone. And, you know, we'll see how well this all works. But it'll be fun.
It's going to be great. All right, brother.
All right, my man.
Peace.
Have a good one.
Enjoy your trip. Safe travels.
Thanks.
This concludes another day of Jocular Broadcasting. The WJOC network is owned and operated by the Jocular Corporation, a subsidiary of the Concussion Collective. At this time, WJOC leaves the airways until our next Jocular Ponderings. We hope to provoke you again and have a pleasant evening.